Here is a version of the piece called Cherish the Lassies, which was delivered to the McIntosh Choir Burn Supper on Wednesday the 3rd of February. Here we go. Dear McIntosh choristers, I confess up front that I am not a Burns scholar. Like others in need of information and inspiration to augment their ignorance, I turned to Wikipedia and must hope that what I found was reasonably accurate. So, with my prior apologies to those of you who know Burns inside out, here we go. To begin, I pose two questions. Did Rabbi Burns cherish his lassies, or was he a reckless and selfish womaniser out to satisfy his lust at any cost? There are three well-documented ladies in the Chronicle of Rabbi Burns: Jean Armour, Mary Campbell, and Agnes McElhose. Being a local girl, the 21-year-old Jean Armour must have known about Rabbi's reputation as a womaniser, behaviour described by the local kirk as incontinence. She and her family must also have known of his intimacy with a sonsy 25-year-old farm servant called Elizabeth Peyton, a fling which resulted in the illegitimate Elizabeth Bess Burns. Four months after this love child arrives, Rabbi sets his sights on his bonnie Jean, and surprise, surprise, she is soon in the family way. But, it seems, this could be true love, because Rabbi at once offers to marry her. But it is not to be. Her father, James Armour, responds with a resounding no. The devious Rabbi concocts a marriage contract, but James takes this unlucky paper to a lawyer who defaces it, thereby annulling their common law marriage. James then sends Jean to see out her confinement with a relative in Paisley, putting his daughter out of reach of our bard. Burns forms the view that Jean has deserted him. At this juncture, our 27-year-old bard is living in Turbolton, putting the finishing touches to his collection of poems and songs, soon to be published as the Kilmarnock edition. Despite his hoped-for fame, Robert is planning to move to Jamaica and has already signed over his tenant farm to his brother Gilbert. Enter Highland Mary of Argyll. The 22-year-old Mary Campbell is a tall, fair-haired, blue-eyed beauty who, from her teens, has been in service in a variety of posh houses dotted around the west of Scotland. Rabbi redirects his energies and, within a few months of his failed marriage to Jean Armour, persuades Mary Campbell into a second common law marriage, which they seal with an exchange of Bibles over running water. These Bibles exist, duly inscribed by both parties, hoarded by Mary's mother. Shortly after her marriage, Mrs. Mary Burns travels alone to Greenock to advise her family she is heading for Jamaica with her husband. Questions spring to my mind. Did the Rabbi hope for a dowry? Was Mary expecting his child? We will never know, because the record shows that Highland Mary of Argyll died within days of arriving home, probably of typhus. Within weeks of his tragic loss, Rabbi is living in Edinburgh to promote his Kilmarnock edition, newly published and stirring up a storm of praise. Rabbi is the new boy in town, the firmer poet, the rising star everyone wants to meet and greet. Did the woman of Edinburgh swoon in his arms and tumble into his bed? I boldly say yes, in handfuls or in hundreds. On and off, no pun intended, a rantin' rovin' Rabbi was in Edinburgh for nearly 2 years, say 600 nights, so I suggest he might have bedded nearer 100 than a handful. In the social whirl, Robert Burns, the now famous poet, meets Mrs. Agnes McElhose, known to her friends as Nancy, the woman who becomes the inspiration for A Fond Kiss. Nancy's father, Andrew Craig, had been a surgeon in Glasgow, and she is an educated, cultured, and aspiring poet, and most definitely not Robert Burns' usual simple country lassie. To understand their situation, we must rewind Nancy's life. Prior to her involvement with Rabbi, she and her four children had been deserted by her drunken and abusive husband, a failed Glasgow lawyer called James McElhose. Under pressure from her parsimonious cousin and benefactor, Lord Craig, previously a lawyer, now a judge, Agnes was pressurised into following her man to Jamaica to do her decent Christian best to restore her marriage and free Lord Craig of his financial and moral burden. On arrival in Jamaica, Agnes discovers her errant hubby has taken a local slave girl as his wife, a marriage sealed with a child. Rejected her marriage in limbo, Agnes returns to Edinburgh on the same ship, where she is consigned by her misfortune to endure a quiet life as a singleton, subsisting in genteel poverty under the protection of her stern and sanctimonious cousin. Into her dullish life comes the 28-year-old Robert Burns, possibly the most eligible bachelor in Edinburgh at that time. They meet at a poetry reading soiree. Nancy is still a fine, strong and attractive prospect. Cupid shoots arrows of passion straight to both hearts, we are told. Nancy writes early the next morning, inviting Rabbi to visit her for a more intimate tete-a-tete. Rabbi pens his acceptance, then falls heavily from a horse-drawn cabby, which results in a severely injured leg. Confined to his lodgings, Rabbi woos the object of his desire by letter. His Nancy responds in kind, morphing to become Clorinda and Sylvander. Weeks go by. Physically unrequited, their passion grows. Letters fly daily. These fervent epistles are carried to and fro by Nancy's maid, a lass called Jenny Clough. As we might expect, Jenny succumbs to a Rabbi's seductive endearments. His leg improved, Rabbi is transported by a sedan chair to see his Nancy. There is no record of hanky-panky, but shortly after this one-off encounter, Jenny's condition is revealed and Rabbi is outed as the culprit. Cupid's quiver is empty. His pursuit of Nancy has stalled. Rabbi makes a tiring 10-hour coach journey back to Ayrshire, where he meets again with Jean, the unwed mother of his twins from their first romance. Their flame of passion rekindles. True love blossoms again. Back in Edinburgh, Agnes writes to Rabbi, ending their affair. Rabbi's star is no longer in the ascendancy. However, he has the comfort of sufficient wealth. His notion of moving to Jamaica has evaporated. 2 years after leaving his home patch, Bard returns to his Ayrshire roots to continue his writing, intending to become a gentleman farmer. Jean is now 23 and expecting what will become a second set of twins sired during his recent visit. 6 weeks after receiving his dismissal letter from Mrs. Agnes McElhose, and at the second time of asking, Rabbi and Jean marry. During their 8 years of marriage, Jean births five more children, making nine in total. Sadly, only three of these legitimate children survive to become adults. Throughout their entire marriage, Rabbi is unreformed, still chasing the lassies, broadcasting his seed. Indeed, within days of the birth of their final child, Rabbi brings Jean a newly born infant, his love child, by Anna Park, a local barmaid. The record hints that Anna may have died in childbirth. His bonny Jean accepts the child and raises it as her own. Here I offer a particular insight from the record for your consideration. It is November 1791, 3 years after their wedding. Jean and Rabbi are in Dumfries, where he is an exciseman by day, working on his song collection and corresponding with notable figures from around the world. His works are selling well and his star is rising again. Mrs. Agnes McElhose writes to Rabbi about Jenny Clow. Her censorious letter is long and written in a pretentious, tongue-twisting style. Here is a tiny snippet. To all appearances, she is at this moment dying, obliged from all the symptoms of rapid decay to quit her service. She has gone to her room with almost without common necessaries, untended and unmourned. In circumstances so distressing, to whom can she look but the father of her child? The Wikipedia account goes on to tell that Rabbi directed his wife Jean to send a messenger to Jenny Clow with a gift of 5 shillings, which in today's world may amount to as much as £350, according to Google. To summarise, the official record shows that Robert Burns fathered 12 children by 4 different women. Were there other children not recorded? I boldly say, almost certainly. So, dear choristers, I repeat my earlier questions. Did Rabbi Burns cherish his lasses, or was he a reckless and selfish womaniser out to satisfy his lust at any cost? You must decide for yourselves. My canter through Rabbi's love life is at an end. And it is now my duty and pleasure to ask our Macintosh gentlemen to please raise your glasses and join me in a toast to our very own amazing and wonderfully tuneful lasses. To our Macintosh lasses. Our Macintosh lasses!